supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Male, female, whatever it might be. And also his ability to change his facial expression and the way he stood and what he did with his hands.
Philadelphia has unique ties to Charles Dickens. In addition to original artifacts held at the Free Library, one of only two public statues in the world depicting Dickens is in West Philly's Clark Park. Gerald will be visiting that statue next week. I'm Peter Crimmins, WHYY News.
In sports, the Phillies crushed the Astros 12-6 last night. Game 3 is tonight at 7:05, and the Union are in Toronto at 1 today. This is WHYY.
Welcome to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we got one of those jam-packed shows for you, cats and kittens. When we get to the question of the week, it'll be about growing garlic in containers. Yes, last year I told you you couldn't do it, but then I did it accidentally, so now I'll explain how you can as well. Deliberately, not accidentally. We'll also talk to our old friend, Dr. Lee Reich, about which are the easiest fruits for a home gardener to grow and which ones are the most difficult. It's a lot to get to, so we better hop right to your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Ginny, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hello, Mike.
Hello, Ginny. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. And you?
I am doing exceptionally well today. Where is Ginny well?
I am in England.
Oh, excellent. What part?
The middle.
And are you anywhere near Nottingham?
Yes, a bit further south, about 40 miles south
of
Nottingham.
Okay. I had the best time in Nottingham.
That's where I was born.
Really? I loved the Sheriff's Castle. I went and visited Robin Hood's grave. And is it Ye Old Jerusalem Inn, the oldest pub in England?
Oh, yes. It's not safe now. I don't think they let people go in anymore.
Oh, what a sin.
I don't know if that's entirely true, but that's what I heard last time I went there.
Oh, it was so much fun. What can we do for you?
I have an amelantia tree. I think you called it a service berry, yes, in my garden. It's not very old. It's gone through a season. And we've had a really bad year this year. I hear you've had it really hot over there, but we've had it really wet, wettest we've ever had.
Oh.
The tree looks really sad. The leaves are yellow. The ground is good. And I'm just wondering what the problem might be.
Now, this is unusual. This is a highly prized Native American, I'll call it a plant. Generally, it's a very large, woody, multi-trunked, multi-limbed shrub. But there are tree forms as well.
Yes.
So do you have a singular trunk?
Yes.
Yeah, I will warn you that should we get this thing back to good health, it may try to go back to its multi-branching natural habit. What led you to plant this Native American tree?
Well, the gardening programs over here about 20 or 30 years ago were constantly telling us how wonderful amelanchias were.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, oh, it's wonderful all times of year. So I've been looking on the lookout for it for a while, and I finally discovered one. And I thought I'd try it in my garden. We took down a horse chestnut tree about 8 or 10 years ago, and it's planted about 6 foot away from where the trunk was.
Okay.
And I wondered if that might be a problem with it as well.
Because you left the stump in the ground.
We left the stump in the ground. It's not a very big garden, but we couldn't get any more of the stump out.
But when you dug the hole for the service berry, you didn't have any problems, did you?
No, but there was a willow the other side of the garden as well, which we also took out. That was massive. So there are a lot of roots under the lawn.
Huh, and the willow kind of implies that this is a wet area.
Yes.
I see. Now, when you got your service berry, was it bald and burlapped, or was it in a pot? It certainly wasn't bare root, was it?
No, it was in a pot.
And when you planted it, what did you do? How deep a hole did you dig? Did you put in it?
We dug a hole just above the height of the pot and put what we compost in, and I think we put bone meal in as well. And then we planted the tree and covered it over and watered it really well.
Okay. And then you, of course, because you watered it really well, then you got the wettest summer in history.
Yes.
And when you planted it, are you saying you planted it slightly higher than it was in the pot or slightly lower?
Slightly lower.
Okay. And we know that it, the ground is wet and this is a wet area. Now, I will tell
you... it drains away really well. It's very good soil.
Now, if it drained away really well, you wouldn't have had that willow being so happy there. The one mistake, two mistakes you made. The big mistake is improving the soil in the hole. That was the gardening advice here in the States for many, many years, but that's since been disproven. And I think, because we're going to move this plant, or at least we're going to replant it. And I think you'll find what's happened, because you made this island of nice soil, that the roots have stayed in that island and maybe even wrapping around each other. They don't want to go out into your lousy garden soil and fight with all these other roots because you gave them a nice pillow to stay inside of.
Okay.
And the advice is always dig a wide hole, but not a deep one.
Fine. So,
and when did this plant go into the ground?
It was about just over a year ago.
Okay, so it's still manageable.
Oh, yes. Yes.
And when you say it's struggling, I presume the leaves are discolored, it's not growing
they're
well.
They're yellow, they're mottled, really sad.
Okay. All signs of poor drainage. I think it's going to be easy to correct, even though we're going to correct it counterintuitively.
Yes.
What I want you to do is on a nice evening, do this in the evening, do the transplanting, lift it up out of the ground, take all those good soil amendments that you put in the hole, and put them somewhere else, but use them to mulch other shrubs or something like that.
Yeah.
You can either put it back in the same spot, move it over a little bit, but what I want you to do is fill the hole back up with some of your native soil, just the regular soil that you have in your garden, and then replant it so high that you can see the root flare. You can see where the trunk begins to go off into the root system. We want to see the very top of that root system above ground. And then give it a little bit of compost as a mulch on the surface of the soil, and that'll be a nice barrier against any potential disease. And obviously, when this thing drops its leaves that were all mottled and discolored, just clean them up real well and trash them this year.
Thank you very much. I'll go and do it now, I think. It's a lovely evening.
Excellent. Excellent. Very good.
Thank you. Thank you, Mike.
Take
Bye-bye.
Care, Jenny.
Thank you for your help.
My pleasure. Bye-bye. 1-888-346-9499. Max, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
How's it going?
I'm doing good, Max. How are you, sir?
Pretty good myself.
And are you a true dedicated Max, or is that the initial part of your name?
Actually, Maxwell, but I just go by Max.
Okay. My son is a Max alone, so to speak, and he's always being asked, are you a Maximilian? Are you a Maxwell? But we just decided to name him Max. It's a great name, isn't it?
Yeah, I like to go by it. It's easy for people to remember, especially.
Yeah. And where is the Max I'm speaking to?
I live in Johnson City, Tennessee.
Very good. What can we do you for, sir?
So I have about 9 maple trees. I started out with about 21 maple trees this winter. I got out of my mother-in-law and father-in-law's gutters for them.
Ha!
And so now I've got these trees in pots because I haven't found a place to plant them yet. And I don't know how to make them survive the winter.
Now, what kind of containers are they in now?
They are now in just, big old pots with some drainage in the bottom. And actually, I have a question about, there's a couple of them that are showing up with black tips on the leaves, and I don't know what that's all about. I'm going to cut back watering, and hopefully that'll take care of it.
That is it. That's your drainage is not good enough, or you're just overwatering. What are the pots made of?
They're just, plastic. I think a couple of them are ceramic.
There's a big difference, because you get freezing temperatures over winter, right?
Right, yes.
So the ceramic pots cannot be used. The trees in those either have to be planted somewhere in the ground or moved to plastic containers, because as soon as that soil freezes hard, no matter what else you've done, the ceramic is going to crack. The terracotta is going to crack.
Okay. There's one in ceramic and the rest are in plastic. And one of the plastic ones is a double-layered plastic, if that makes any sense.
Is that the one where the tree tips are turning black?
Yes, that is the one. That is, in fact, and it's the largest one. That's the first one that I transferred.
Ding, ding, ding. That's probably one of these stupid self-watering pots that is always keeping the root system moist. So it's really drowning that poor plant. So let's take that pot out of the equation.
Okay.
It's not lack of land you have, right? It's just indecisiveness so far for planting them.
Well, I don't live at the farm that my in-laws own. And we're not sure that they want to plant them there because we're not sure what's going to happen with that property.
But you do have some ground of your own.
Yeah, I do. I have some places that I could plant them.
Because even if the farm is in play, you can take them to the farm, dig holes, and drop the pots right into the holes so that the soil level in the pot is equal level with the soil level of the land. And then you're done. Then their roots are below the soil line where they need to be. They're just like trees in the ground. They'll survive winter brilliantly, as would maples that had just dropped, you know, their seeds onto the ground that had sprouted up. And in the spring, you can just take the pots right back out of the ground again. This is what landscapers do with unsold plants. They just drop them into the ground, pot and all, so they can bring them up in the spring, and it's like new.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Mike.
My pleasure, Max. Good luck, sir.
Bye-bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and announce that I'll appear at Springdale Farms in Cherry Hill, New Jersey on Thursday, September 27th at 6 p.m. At the TEDx event at the Colonial Theater in Phoenixville, PA on Saturday, October 6th. And at the Mount Laurel, New Jersey Library on Sunday, October 7th at 1 and 3 p.m. But don't go looking for all the details at the events and appearances section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back with how to grow garlic in pots over the winter and our good friend Lee Wright telling us all about the best fruits you can grow in your home garden. I'm Fruity Mike McGrath, and this is You Bet Your Fruity Garden.
Burpee, a national supplier of seeds, plants, and bulbs, supports You Bet Your Garden and reminds growers that now is the time to start fall crops like broccoli, cabbage, and cauliflower, and to get ready for garlic planting. More information at burpee.com.
You're listening to WHYY.
Medford Lees, a not-for-profit community serving those ages 55-plus and guided by Quaker principles, supports WHYY. This fall, there's an opportunity to explore, learn, and discover with Medford Lees as they launch their new Pathways series. Pathways features public programming on topics covering art, politics, music, history, horticulture, and more. Full details about Medford Lees public events, educational programming, and its campuses in Medford and Lumberton, New Jersey, are online at medfordlees.org.
I'm Brooke Gladstone, and on this week's On the Media, we asked a few of our listeners to tell us precisely where they heard liberal bias on NPR. One answered, everywhere.
I've listened to NPR for years, heard many, many religious shows, and I have not once got to the end of the show and thought, man, I am so glad that that guy was on there. He said exactly what I wanted him to say.
Don't miss this week's On the Media from WNYC.
Tomorrow morning at 11 on WHYY.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, in the past I've told you not to try to grow garlic in containers over the winter. Well, last year I did it. It worked out great, so I guess you can too. And I'll tell you how to when we get to the question of the week. We'll also take lots more of your fascinating phone calls. But now it's time to welcome our special guest, Dr. Lee Wright, author, I just made him blush, author of many books, including The Pruning Book, a very shy title there, Landscaping with Fruit, and his newest book, Grow Fruit Naturally. You hear Lee's name mentioned a lot on the show when we have to reference fruit growing or pruning. I take everything out of his books. I just cheat. They're my little cheat sheets. Lee, welcome back to You Bet Your Garden.
Good to be here, Mike.
We've had you on about Grow Fruit Naturally. We've had you on about the pruning book. I thought it would be interesting for you and I to talk about what people who want to grow fruit should start with and to kind of get their expectations in order. Because I get so many phone calls from people who, like, plant an apple tree and think it's going to take care of itself, or they plant like 8 grapevines and that was the sum total of their investment. They planted them. Why aren't things working out? My feeling is there's things you can do that with, like raspberries and blackberries, that if you just stay out of their way, they're going to give you nice fruit if you just pay attention and pick it. Do you think those are the easiest things for people to get started with?
I think that they are among the easiest, but I think it's a good point that you make, that people think, often when people think about planting fruit, the first thing they think about is planting apples, something about apples equal fruit. And the point that I try and make in my book is that a very important part of growing fruit naturally is choosing a fruit that is easy to grow where you live. East of the Rocky Mountains, pretty much the hardest fruits to grow are probably apples, cherries, plums, apricots, nectarines. Often when I say that, people say, well, so what can I grow? That seems like all the fruits. So, and there's so many other fruits you can grow. And if somebody wants a pretty standard tree fruit, what I would recommend is pears.
That seems to me to be the universal agreement, that if you want to get started with fruits.
Fruit trees.
Right.
Standard fruit trees.
Standard fruit trees, that pears are do the best with the least care.
Yeah. And you have so many things to choose from with pears. First of all, you have Asian pears and you have European pears.
Well, talk about that.
Well, Asian pears are the ones, they're usually but not always round, and they have a different texture and flavor than European pears. They're a different species. And they have what's called a cracking texture, where they're sort of crisp, but when you bite into them, they explode with this sweet juice in your mouth. So they're quite good, very easy to grow, very decorative, too.
Pears, to me, seem to be almost apple-like, more like apples than peaches or other tree fruits.
Yeah, they're very similar, but for some reason they just don't have the same pest problems or as severe pest problems. They do have some pest problems, but a pear is something you can choose a variety and you can plant it, you prune it, and pruning isn't that difficult, and you will get pears. If you wanted some diversity in fruit, there's 5,000 varieties of pears you can choose from.
And they keep.
And they keep, right? They keep just like apples. You can keep, there are pears I will keep into, through winter.
Whereby with peaches, you got to be out there every day.
Right.
I find myself harvesting the peaches always a little early because everything wants to claim them. Squirrels,
right.
Stink bugs, yeah, brown rot.
Don't get me started on squirrels.
On stink bugs.
Yeah. Right, squirrels and stink. This is, every year there's a certain theme. So the theme for this year is squirrels and stink bugs.
Yeah.
On the negative, on the positive, very good peach crops.
I wanted to talk to you a little bit today about grapes, because I've never grown grapes, and I feel like this is a great lack of knowledge. I always feel more comfortable talking about stuff that I've grown, preferably that I've grown for years and years. And I know the answers with grapes, but it's so theoretical.
Uh-huh.
And people, again, this seems to be, along with apples, the thing that people put in the ground and then think it's going to take care of itself. And do grapes need more pruning than peaches, or is this a tie for first place?
Well, I would say it's a tie for first place. And grapes are much easier to grow than apples. I mean, there's a lot of the two things with grapes for success are choosing an appropriate variety for the climate and the pest problems, and there are 5,000 varieties of grapes.
I often tell people, because people want to prune ornamentals too much. They just think everything needs to be pruned. And you have to remind them that in nature, not a lot of stuff gets pruned except by deer or rabbits or that kind of thing. But there are some plants that really don't respond well unless they're pruned every year. And I think grapes would be the poster child, right?
Right. They grow fine. I mean, you look in the woods, they grow fine. But you do not get good grapes. You do not get grapes that are, pretty disease-free. And you don't get grapes that are within reach.
Right. And I always tell people, and I don't know if this goes across the board for grapes, but one of my lines is when the vine is putting on its fruit and its leaves, you need to be thinning both of them. Both the leaves and to keep air circulation and the fruit clusters, as with apples and peaches, so that what's left has the potential to develop into real market quality
fruit. Right, that has something to do with the variety, how much thinning you need. But a lot of the thinning actually is done when you prune them earlier, because that removes potential leaves. But then you're right. Then sometimes, depending on how it's trained or the variety or the season, you might want to thin out some branches, leaves, or fruit clusters just to get better air circulation and more energy going to fewer fruits.
So we would urge people to grow raspberries and blackberries, warning them that these are cane fruits that need room to spread, and they will, if you're lucky, spread aggressively.
And they need to be pruned every year.
Well, you know, I don't really prune my raspberries. I'll tell you what I do. I have a heritage raspberries, mostly. So the first year, the cane grows really long and then fruits on the end. And at the end of the season, I'll just go out and clip off, you know, the old areas where the fruit was. Just a tiny bit, maybe 6 inches. And then I'll leave that cane alone over winter because I know it's going to fruit again.
Yeah.
In the late spring. And then by the time it almost seems like you pick the last fruit, the cane can't wait to die, that cane. It's
right.
Like the leaves are all yellow. It's calling the suicide prevention hotline. And within a month, you don't even have to prune it. You just push it to the side and it snaps off. They seem to have this.
You do get rid of them one way or another.
One way or another, I do get rid of them.
Yeah, that's the important thing. The other thing, actually, with cane fruits is not to let them spread in all directions, or you have a bramble patch. You want to keep, like, ideally, a row maybe a foot wide, so you get a lot of light and air. Let's talk about another common fruit that's very easy to grow, that if I was going to grow just one fruit, this would be it. Ready?
The black mulberry.
No.
Okay.
Blueberries.
Yes. Yes.
Easy to grow. You have to do a few things. You have to get the soil right. You have to keep birds away. But beautiful plants year-round. Taste great. They're super healthful. And you can choose varieties. My blueberry harvest, this is my best fruit. My blueberry harvest starts in mid-June and goes into September.
Because you have an early, a mid, and a late variety.
Well, early, mid, and late varieties.
You're right.
So it's like the whole season. And you know, with good... If you take care of the soil correctly, do everything correctly, you get enormous yields. I was just computing. We keep careful records of yields.
Yeah.
Just so I can brag.
Mm-hmm.
So my blueberries so far this year have averaged about 11 quarts per bush.
That's very good. Yeah. And again, I mean, it is low-hanging fruit, Lee. They are so easy to grow. They make you look good when you know.
And low-hanging, you don't need a ladder.
Exactly, exactly.
And the other thing I have to say, the other fruit that I'm not that crazy over is strawberries.
Really?
Just because I think they taste okay, and it's nice that they're early, but I don't like talking about low-hanging. I do not like to crawl for my fruit.
I'll make a liar out of you because I know we both have a common favorite fruit, which is the alpine strawberry.
Right, I do like those.
The little clumping strawberries.
But I grow them in a pot on a wall next to my walkway so I don't have to crawl for
them. Yes, no, all my alpines are in pots. And all I do when winter comes is I push the pots up against the side of the house. Some years I cover them with shredded leaves. Some years I don't. It just seems if you pay some attention to them, they're happy.
And if you pay no attention, they're not that unhappy.
All right. Lee Reich, ladies and gentlemen, if you need pruning advice, read his book called The Pruning Book. If you want to read about all the underappreciated fruits, Lee, do you see what I have here?
Uh-huh.
I brought it in. It's a heavy book, you know. Got to give me some credit here. If you want to read his early tome about, but of course it's all been revised. And
well, that is the revision.
This is the revision, Uncommon Fruits for Every Garden. This is the book where I learned about you. And his two newest books are Landscaping with Fruit, which is very interesting, again, because you do rate the attractiveness, the appeal of it. And I think everybody, you know, we're all trying to grow more in smaller spaces. So it's not just enough to get a nice edible harvest, depending on how visible you are. You really do need attractive-looking plants.
Right.
And I think in that book, you really show how to achieve that. And your newest book is Grow Fruit Naturally, because when Lee talks about spraying or other things, he's not talking about spraying toxins. He's talking about spraying cool, organic, and sustainable stuff.
Or ideally spraying nothing. That's the ideal.
Yeah, or water or something like
that. Or nothing.
Yeah. All right. Lee Reich, author of many books on fruit, an excellent book on pruning. Lee, always a pleasure to speak with
you. Thanks. Good to be here.
And now back to your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Caitlin, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hello.
Hello, Caitlin. How are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
I am doing just fine. Where is Caitlin good?
I'm in Maracaibo, Venezuela.
Really? You're in
Venezuela.
Are you a native Venezuelan? Are you an American working over there? What?
I'm from the Philadelphia area, actually, and I'm here working at an international school.
Excellent, excellent. Good for you. What can we do for you?
I'm a teacher here, but this year I've also gotten the position of running the community service program for the high school students, and we are interested in starting a school garden. And I've done a lot of gardening in my life. I've moved a lot since college and put in many gardens, but there are some very particular concerns in Venezuela, and I was wondering if you had advice for general school gardening, but also any tropical gardening advice.
Well, Venezuela, I would imagine a tropical climate, the days are fairly equal to each other, right? There's not a lot of seasonality.
No, we're running about, I'd say, 90 to 95 degrees every day all year.
Right. And the school year, is school in session all year? Does it model the American school year?
It's similar to the American school year, but we start in the beginning of August, and then we have a three-week break December and January, and we go until the middle of June.
And that's remarkably similar. And are you in an urban area, a rural area?
We're in an urban area, and I'd wanted to do a garden last year, but I just really didn't see anywhere on campus that it would be possible. But we just found this spot that's behind a section of the building, about 20 feet, maybe by 100 feet. Maybe a little bit more than that, but it seems to get consistent sun throughout the day.
Well, I don't think, I don't think you need full sun, Caitlin.
Right.
I think you need morning sun, and probably you need afternoon shade.
Okay.
I was having this discussion with somebody at an event the other day. When it says full sun on a seed packet, you know, they're selling that seed packet all the way from Maine to Florida. And in Maine,
right,
it means full sun. And in southern Florida, it means please give me afternoon shade. So your full sun down there, if it truly is in the 90s every day, that's going to be too much for the crops that you're used to growing. And was this ground near buildings? Was it in a developed area? Is there any chance the soil could be contaminated with lead or pesticides or anything?
I don't think so. From what I've heard, about 2 years ago, there were some trees removed from the area.
Oh,
where
okay.
It is, but it looks pretty level, and there's grass growing there now.
Okay, good. Well, if it was near an old building, I'd be concerned about lead paint. You still have family back in Philly, right?
Yeah.
You know, it wouldn't be foolish of you to send them a box with a little bit of dirt in it and ask them to send it to the soil lab at Penn State and get a $20 lead test just to make sure what you're working with is good. Now, do you have access to any supplemental soil, any kind of compost or topsoil?
You can buy some bagged, they call it mesclado, but it seems like mostly not well mixed dirt and maybe wood debris, but you can get worm compost, I found at some
good. And what I would suggest, even though it's probably not the direction you were thinking of, is ask the parents of the students what they grow in home gardens or what they remember being grown in home gardens.
Yeah.
Because when you're in Venezuela, it would be great to grow the foods of Venezuela, the native foods, the things that these people grew up with, and also that are going to be much better adapted to the climate. I mean, certainly, you go ahead and put in a couple of tomato and pepper plants for yourself, but I'm sure there's going to be native foods that these people are dying to see grown again. And you may need to do a little educating of yourself to figure out exactly how to grow them. But they're going to respond really well to the climate and circumstances. This is a great opportunity for you to help preserve part of their culture.
It
might be too much for you to try to start out with raised beds. So what I'm going to suggest you do is you make artificial, invisible raised beds. Just take some stakes and string and map out areas that are 4 feet wide and 8 feet long, and then other areas that are 2 feet wide. And keep the 2 feet wide area for walking only, and keep the 4 foot wide areas for growing only. So that way you'll get the benefits of raised beds without having to find construction materials, without having to find all that soil. The idea is you're not going to walk where the crops are growing. You're going to be able to reach into the center from either side.
Yeah, the idea is to do something that's going to be sustainable. There's a lot of different age groups that are going to be able to work with it. So,
well, I think it's a great idea. Thank you for your service over there. And you have our email. If you encounter problems as you're building it, just shoot me questions and I'll get back to you.
Okay, great.
Good luck on your great adventure.
Oh, thanks.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and remind owners of Cool Season Lawns, that's Bluegrass Ryan Fescue, that your turf needs its biggest feeding of the year this month to help it recover from winter. You can use corn gluten meal, a bagged organic lawn fertilizer, or just rake lots of high-quality compost into the grass. But please, just say no to chemical fertilizers. They actually weaken your lawn, and they surely weaken the planet. But don't go looking for all the details under L for Lawn Care in the A to Z section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back with more of your fabulous phone calls and how to grow garlic in containers over the winter. I'm Mike McGrath, and this is You Bet Your Garlic.
Burpee, a national supplier of seeds, plants, and bulbs, supports You Bet Your Garden and reminds growers that now is the time to start fall crops like broccoli, cabbage, and cauliflower, and to get ready for garlic planting. More information at burpee.com.
You're listening to WHYY.
A stroke can rob us of our ability to speak, to move, to understand. The new Mainline Health Neurovascular Center at Bryn Mawr Hospital uses an interventional approach to the rapid treatment of stroke and aneurysm. Formed in collaboration with stroke experts from Jefferson's Faculty Practice Plan and the Jefferson Neuroscience Network, they use minimally invasive techniques to avoid open brain surgery, to prevent disabilities, and to save lives. The Mainline Health Neurovascular Center at Bryn Mawr Hospital supports WHYY.
One year after protesters set up camps in public spaces across the United States, the success of the Occupy movement is not quite clear.
Occupy worked really, really hard to stay grassroots, to not cut deals, and they may have fallen off the side and may have dissipated.
I'm Tess Vigeland. That's next time on Marketplace Money from APM. This afternoon at 3 on WHYY.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, yes, in the past I've discouraged people from planting garlic in containers because it has to be outside over the winter. Well, last year I had a lot of garlic left over. I planted it in containers and it did good, so I guess you're allowed to do it too. We'll tell you how to do it when we get to the question of the week, right after a couple more of your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Terry, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hello.
Hello, Terry. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, Mike?
I am just fine today. Thank you, sir. Where is Terry Good?
I am from Glendale, Maryland.
Glendale. Now, where in Maryland is that?
It's due east of Bowie.
Oh, okay. Right, which I always used to mispronounce until somebody told me to stop calling it Bowie. All right. Well, you're in the greater D.C. area then.
I am. That's right.
Okay. Very good. What can we do for Terry in, wait a minute, Bowie?
Glendale, actually, but Bowie's close enough.
Okay.
I've got squirrels are tearing up my tomatoes.
Excuse
me.
No, Terry. You have to use the right terminology.
All right.
Evil squirrels.
Evil squirrels are destroying my tomato crop. They have devoured all but about a half a dozen this year. and I've never in my life seen a squirrel eat a tomato, and I'm in my early 50s, so I'm a little lost here. I know you're the wizard, so we're talking to you.
One thing I have to say, because people yell at me when I don't say it, is sometimes the squirrels are just thirsty, so the first thing you have to do is put out a bird bath with water in it if that's what they want. But I can assure you that that's not what they want. They are just evil.
Right, because I put out a bucket of water right by the tomato plants, and they completely bypassed the water to get the tomatoes.
Are your tomatoes growing inside cages?
They are in a cage, yes.
Okay. One thing that you can do to stop this even temporarily is to use caging material to seal off the top of the cage. So the squirrels can't go down inside. Maybe they can reach some tomatoes, but some of the better tomatoes in the center would be protected from them.
Right,
so
okay.
That's job number one. In terms of what I do, I protect my tomatoes with motion-activated sprinklers. The major brand out there is called the Scarecrow, and it works very well. It's got a big head that looks like Heckle and Jekyll, and it comes with a stake. You put it in the ground. You put a 9-volt battery into the head. You point it at the area you want to protect. You hook your garden hose up to it. You turn your garden hose on full blast, and nothing happens until something breaks the beam. And then the motion detector activates, and the sprinkler soaks them with a couple of cups of cold water.
Okay.
It chases deer. Squirrel hate it. It keeps Canada geese off of lawns. It keeps my cats from using my raised beds as litter boxes as well. These motion-activated sprinklers seem to work very well. Oh, they work very well for me. There are also other motion-activated devices out there that work better for deer because squirrels get used to stuff right away.
Mm-hmm.
But there's another one called the Deer Chaser that's a little green rectangle. It has the exact same motion-activated sensor. I guess all of those look fairly similar. And this takes 3 or 4, like, D-cell batteries. And
okay.
When something trips the beam, it turns on an astonishingly bright LED light and turns a radio on that you can preset to, like, the all-talk channel. So, you know, a squirrel who's going there, like, early in the morning before you've gotten up, all of a sudden there's this bright light in its eyes, and Rush Limbaugh is yelling at it, and it tends to startle them. In the front of my house, I have 2 peach trees, and I set up the radio and light one at one end, and I set up the motion-activated sprinkler at the other end, and I stopped my peach loss 100%.
Wow.
And so the tomatoes, I think, are going to be exactly the same thing, because deer were not climbing up in my trees. This was squirrels and possums.
Right.
And I think the startle response is really helpful. But the truth is, no creature gets used to being hit with cold water. No creature likes it. And one last thing. I hope it's still there. There were a bunch of college kids years ago who set up this great website, the Squirrel Defamation League, to tell the world the truth about squirrels.
Okay.
I don't know if it's still there, but see if you can access deadsquirrel.com.
Deadsquirrel.com.
Yes.
All right.
You'll find a fellowship of community there.
Excellent.
All right, Terry, good luck.
Thank you so much, Mike. Appreciate your help.
1-888-346-9499. Deidre, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike.
Hello, Deidre. Am I pronouncing your name correctly?
It's Deidre.
Deidre. Okay. And where is Deidre?
In Princeton, New Jersey.
I love Princeton. I've appeared there many times. All right, what can we do for Deidre in Princeton, New Jersey?
Well, I'm going to have some renovation work done on my house, actually taking off the front of the house. We're extending the front 6 feet to put an entry on, because we don't have an entryway now.
What, do you just push your way through the walls? No.
No. We have a door, but we don't have a foyer.
Okay. And when's the work going to get done?
It's going to start in a few weeks.
And which plants are being killed by this work, theoretically?
Oh, I hope not. My beautiful azaleas which are right in the front of the house.
Oh, man. Not the best time.
No, I know.
How old are they?
Well, you know, we've been here 30-plus years. And,
oh, man.
They were here when we moved in, and they're doing great.
How big are these things?
Oh, they're pretty big. They're about 4 feet high, and they go across the front of the house about 25 feet.
And they're all filled in and nice. And
Yeah, they're beautiful.
And will part of the house be where they're living, or you're just afraid they're going to get trampled during the construction?
No, they're going to have to be moved. They're going to have to be moved about 30 feet.
Whoa. To a totally different location.
Well, still in the front of the house, but 30 feet from where they are.
Okay, that's a distance. You've got quite a yard. Do you normally prune the azaleas after they're done blooming?
A little bit, yeah.
Okay. All right, well, I guess the first thing I'm going to say is, are you willing to give up a season of bloom?
If we have to protect the plants, then
now,
yeah.
You know, the root mass of these things is going to be enormous. Now, but they're going to tear off the front of your house and put a new front on, right?
Right.
So do you have any idea what kind of equipment they're going to use? Will they have, like, a backhoe?
Yes, I believe so.
Everything I'm going to suggest falls clearly under the category of cowboy gardening.
Okay.
What you would do is, before any other construction work is done, you would have the backhoe carve out their new home.
Okay.
Before you move a plant, you always dig the new hole.
Okay.
Now, when you replant the azaleas, I don't want you to modify the soil in the hole at all.
Okay.
I want you to just try to, you know, have them dig the right size hole. If the azaleas, once they're moved, are a little higher in their new home than
right.
before, that's great.
Okay.
But you don't want them lower. Can you still tell where the individual plants are?
Yes.
So, okay, get the backhoe underneath one of these individual plants, go down as deep as it can, lift it out of the ground, and then it can either be put onto a tarp and dragged to its new home, or the backhoe can go over to the new home, and, you know, you'll need a couple of people to replant these things.
Right.
The tops don't weigh a lot. All the weight is in the root ball.
Right.
And your goal is to not see any roots. Your
okay.
goal is to move giant islands of soil.
Okay.
Drop them in, and then after you get them in, and you fill in the soil around them, you know, do all that schmageggy,
uh-huh.
then what you would do is you would get a big bale of milled peat moss, spread it all around them as a mulch, and then cover the peat moss with compost. And if we get a dry period, even as we approach winter, give them a long, deep soaking. Don't do any short, frequent waterings. Don't put anything special in the planting hole. Don't put anything good in the planting hole. You want them to go into the same sort of soil their roots are going to have to be accustomed to.
Okay.
But you can put peat moss and compost on top to apologize them and make them happy.
Okay.
Your other option would be to prune them back to half their size and dig them out of the ground as best you can. And, of course, doing that, you would break off some roots and stuff. I'll tell you, you have some wiggle room. You can lose, like, 20% of the roots. That, you know, it won't kill the plant. But the more you can move them like giant islands of soil with the roots inside, like in a bank vault,
right.
the better this is going to work in terms of you having the same kind of plant. It can be done, and it is the best way to do it. But you need the equipment, and you need to budget that time for the guys as well.
Oh, I will. I really will. And thank you so much, Mike. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Good luck.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Take care.
Okay, you too. Bye-bye.
All right, as promised, it's time for the question of the week. Garlic, can it have companions in containers? Alexis Landis, You Bet Your Garden producer, please read this week's question.
Nina in Hillsborough, New Jersey writes, I grow a variety of veggies in large pots, townhouse farming. I am reading up on garlic as I'd like to add it to my gardening adventures. Since my growing space is limited to large pots, is there something the garlic should not be planted with? Or perhaps something that would make a good bunkmate? I grow lots of tomatoes, strawberries, potatoes, hot peppers, herbs, more herbs, and spring peas. I appreciate your time.
Well, why is garlic more like Superman than Batman? Because garlic works alone. Sorry for the little bit of fanboy fun, but the basic point is correct. Garlic needs its own dedicated area where it can grow unmolested and claim as much underground space as possible to develop the biggest possible bulbs for you. It's almost like below-ground sweet corn, which is always, or should always be, grown in its own big patch. Now, I did kind of discuss growing garlic in containers last year, but that was in response to a question from a 100% indoor gardener. And my feelings on this topic have changed since I accidentally planted about 100 cloves in 4 rectangular containers last year. Okay, it wasn't a complete accident, like the time I used a lime-rich compost on my blueberry plants. Now that was an accident. What happened was that I still had a couple dozen medium-sized heads of garlic left over after planting 3 big beds with my biggest cloves last September. Then I went to start processing these leftovers into garlic powder and discovered that they were all starting to sprout. Now, once those little green things appear at the tips of your cloves, the flavor is ruined, and garlic's use as a seasoning is pretty much over. But garlic that's starting to sprout is fine to plant. The only problem was that I was already using too many of my beds for garlic, and beds filled with garlic are not available for other uses until early July. One more bed of garlic and I'd be growing some of my tomatoes in the car next spring. And I had just bought a bunch of cute rectangular plastic containers on impulse as I wandered through a discount store. So I filled the containers with 3/4 soil-free mix and 1/4 compost, planted the garlic cloves in them, and then had to decide where they were going to go. Like fruit trees and spring bulbs, garlic requires a certain number of chilling hours over winter, which meant the containers had to stay outside. But where I live, slightly northern Pennsylvania, the garlic would freeze solid and be ruined if I left the containers out in the open above ground. So I pushed the containers flush up against a side of the house that has a lot of big plants in the yard, peach trees, rhododendrons, a white pine, and planned to cover them with shredded leaves once the trees had given up their yearly bounty. Then we had a biblical, as in story of Job biblical, 12 inches of heavy wet snow a few days before Halloween. And the trees were still full of leaves, and the weight of that heavy snow just tore them up. We had downed trees, broken trees, trees that until recently were still trying to grow sideways, and 5 long days without power. The containers blended in with our siding, and I never gave that garlic another thought. Then this April, I was out still picking up fallen branches and saw them. Some of the containers had been exposed all winter, which luckily was a warm winter, and some had been mulched by tree trash, but all had big green shoots coming up. When I picked the first one up to move it into better sun, I had to tug hard. The garlic roots were already out of the bottom of the container and trying to grow in the soil. I eventually harvested a nice medium-sized head for every clove I had planted, heads that would have been much bigger if I had planted fewer cloves per container. So that's the deal. Your container should be at least 1 foot deep. The bigger the container, the better you'll do, especially if winter is harsh. The containers can't be made of terracotta, ceramic, or anything else that's going to break when the soil inside freezes hard. Rectangular containers are easier to protect, and they're easier to space your garlic cloves in. Whatever, give each clove a full 6 inches of space all around. That's 6 inches away from any other clove, and especially from the sides of the containers, where the risk of freezing too hard is the greatest. Then push the containers up against the side of your house. If you're north of Philadelphia, it would be a real good idea to cover them with well-shredded leaves after the first hard freeze. Uncover the containers in early spring, move them into full sun, and follow the growing directions for regular garlic. just be aware that none of these containers can have bunk mates. They have to be devoted to garlic and garlic alone from September through the end of June. You can use them for other things after the end of June, but you can't double up, because like we said, garlic works alone. Well, that sure was some interesting information about growing garlic out of the ground now, wasn't it? Luckily for you, the question of the week appears in print at the Gardens Alive website, where you can read it over carefully and follow links to lots more articles about garlic growing. Just click the link at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Yikes, my producer is threatening to put me in a pot and leave me out over winter if I don't get out of this studio. We must be out of time, but you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499 or send us your email, your tired, your poor, your wretched refuse teeming towards our garden shore at garden@whyy.org. Please tell us where you live. Please like us on Facebook. Please put the actual subject in the subject line. Like us on Facebook. And check first to see if the information you seek is already waiting for you at our website, youbetyourgarden.org, where you can click through to the question of the week. Find the solution to hundreds of garden problems, hint, hint, just like yours, hint, hint, in our Garden Answers A to Z section. Like us on Facebook and or listen to this show. Listen to old shows and or download this week's podcast. And when you're done with that, you can visit the You Bet Your Garden Facebook page and like us already. Elizabeth Perez Luna is executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Ken Queter plays our theme song and likes us on Facebook. Our engineer this week is Kevin Don't Call Me Merv Griffin. Our webmaster is Baneful Rich Banowitz. His faithful internet companion is Sarah Kazar. They practically invented Facebook. Our social media director is Amanda McGrath, who is wondering why you haven't liked us on Facebook yet. The incredibly likable Alexis Landis produces You Bet Your Garden for WHYY-FM in Philadelphia. Extremely well-liked Joanna Hatzis is our production assistant. Nobody doesn't like our esteemed editor, Al Banks. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, saying, like us on Facebook already. There's transmission repair shops that got more likes than we do. It's not about me, people. It's about the show. Like the show on Facebook, okay? Oh, great. Now we lost the engineer. Alexis, get him off the floor. What's that? He went catatonic because it's the first time in 14 years I said something wasn't about me? Well, hardy har har. I like that. Get it, people? Like that. Wake up out there. Boy, it's a tough room. How tough is it? I tell you, this room is so tough. The way to put it. As cold weather approaches, homeowners need to be careful not to accidentally invite vermin to nest nearby. I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden, we'll reveal how to keep the dreaded rat far, far away. Plus your fabulous phone calls.
Mike's garrulous gabble can lead to great gains in the garden. Gladioli, goldenrod, gourds, gardenia. Join us at 11 every Saturday morning for You Bet.